I hope you are awake. I promise you it will be an entertaining session. Okay, I won't actually break to song and dance, but there's going to be some music actually. All right, so this is from freshly minted fieldwork, just finished 3 weeks ago, the first stage of it at least, and I'll be going back to the field next summer to continue, or maybe somewhere in between. And this project is part of the project that Tim mentioned earlier on Urban Aspirations. So as you may have realized from Kelvin's presentation, a couple of us have difficulty framing it in terms of urbanisms, yeah, because we're not actually urban geographers, but I'm going to give it a go anyway. So my starting point, I'm actually a migration researcher. So my starting point is I am focusing on migrations as circulation and comparisons. So in particular, how human circulations tie different cities into networks of influence and collaboration. And I've carried out field work in Guangzhou and Wuhan, two Chinese cities, to compare the different motivations for Africans migrating to these cities and their experiences within these cities. So Guangzhou and Wuhan attract different types of African migrants, and I should say here the ones that I have studied are student migrants. Also, I think eventually we intend to compare our different projects across these cities that are studied in the other projects as well, but for now I'm just trying to do a comparison between Guangzhou and Wuhan. Okay. So for our project, I think we talk about it, we frame it in terms of aspirations, and what caught my attention is the way that Apa Durai talks about aspirations as cultural capacities that are socially determined and unevenly distributed. Now in that article, he talks very much about rich versus the poor, or he focuses more on the poor as marginalized. But in the work that I'm doing, I think what struck me is how claims to aspirations are also differentiated between nationals and non-nationals. So when he talks about the poor, I think it was people who are considered, they have legal status in that city as citizens, but in my case I'm looking at African migrants. So as non-nationals, what are the different conditions and constraints that they negotiate in these Chinese cities? So my project looks at how African migrants see their role and place in Chinese cities and in relation to their home countries, so countries in Africa that they come from. And I should point out here that the African student migrants that go to China are mainly middling migrants, meaning that they come from middle-class backgrounds. So they're not necessarily what we understand as poor. Okay, some of them have parents who run successful businesses in China, and they have come to continue with the business on a student visa, or they have come to acquire skills that will enable them to start their own businesses in China in the future. Now, the other thing that I am influenced by is the idea of cosmopolitanism. So in thinking about urbanisms, I am kind of playing around, you know, with some ideas on cosmopolitan urbanism. But I should add at the start that I am skeptical about the phrase cosmopolitanism. And my earlier work has really considered more the politics of cosmopolitanism. So whenever in my earlier projects I set out looking for cosmopolitanism, usually what I find are the politics of cosmopolitanism. So in this quote by Myers, I think it's, what's his first name, Tim?
Garth
Myers, right? He was here for a workshop on post-colonializing geography. And in the paper, he talked about enhancing the normalization of cities outside of the global north in a cosmopolitan manner. And then in another paper by, I think it's Nick Clark, he talks about looking for actually existing and a critically reflexive cosmopolitan urbanism. Okay, and he talks about this with reference to inter-urban partnerships and policy transfers within the north-south framing. So he was actually critiquing these urban partnerships. Inter-urban partnerships as being imitative and opportunistic. Now, I think, you know, both authors have should be recognized, okay, for wanting to think about cosmopolitanism through the lens of cities. But I feel that in the scholarship on cosmopolitanism, oftentimes it's not actually spelt out. How do we study cosmopolitanism? What does cosmopolitanism really mean? So this is something that I'm looking out for in my work on African student migrants in China. But I should add, I haven't got there yet. Okay, this is still work in progress. Now, the other thing that I also found quite helpful in thinking about Africa-China relations, which was actually what drew me to this project, okay, is the same paper by Garth Myers. He talks about Africa-China ties and their impacts on urban spatiality. And he draws on the idea of trans-territorial cities by Abdul Malik Simon. Okay, in the paper, he talks about trans-territorial cities as being generated by and generating trade flows. And in the scholarship on Africa-China relations, this is very much what scholars have focused on, how trade is sustained, FDIs, etc. And from then comes the presence of the migrant. Okay, so migrant presence is manifested in urban spaces because of these trade flows. In Chinese cities, in a subsequent slide, I'll talk a bit more about the scholarship on Africa-China migration. But for now, I just want to say that in Chinese cities, immigration tensions have emerged over African presence. Okay, and it's not just about Africans in China, but more broadly, there is now an emerging interest in the different kinds of immigration tensions that are happening in China, whether it's immigration from the Western countries, from Korea, or from other parts of the world. So actually, at the start of the slide, this is actually from a magazine that I came across when I was doing my field work, and it was a special on the new immigrants that can be found in China. So China has traditionally been known as an emigration country. You have Chinese migrants going to other parts of the world, but now a reverse flow is happening, and the African migrants are part of that immigration that's coming to China. Okay, let me go back there. Right, so these types of immigration tensions are manifesting in particular at the grassroots level through interactions that cause friction. So this is actually a phrase from that magazine article itself, which I can read to you in Chinese, okay, but it probably wouldn't make much sense. So I have already translated it here. And so what I'm trying to say is that my interest is very much in what's happening at the grassroots level and how these interactions are perhaps in some ways, you know, cosmopolitan, but in many other ways also demonstrating friction. So then, as I have suggested earlier, okay, much of the literature on Africa-China relations is about trade flows, and the migrant presence is then an outcome of those trade flows. Okay, but apart from trade, this is the question that I ask, you know, what else prompts such trans-territorial processes through migration? So here's a map. I don't usually use maps, but at some point, I think in my career, someone said to me, you're a geographer, you should use more maps. So this is my valiant attempt, right? This is Wuhan, where I did one of my study sites, okay? This is Guangzhou, which was my other study site. And I chose these two cities because Guangzhou is actually known as the chocolate city, okay? It's a derogatory term, all right? Basically, it's because a lot of African migrants go there. So the term, the label has been given to it. It's known as the chocolate city. Wuhan, okay, so Guangzhou attracts a lot of traders, African traders, because of the sale of import-export trade going on there. Now, Wuhan is a bit different, okay? Wuhan is not a trading city, but Wuhan has universities that attract student migrants. So I came to know about it through some context, and I decided I will not just study Guangzhou, which most people have done, but also go to Wuhan to see if there can be some comparisons drawn. Apart from these two places, there are African migrants in other parts of China, such as Yiwu, which is also a trading city. And there are also African student migrants who go to Tianjin, Shanghai, Beijing. Okay, but those are my two sites. So this is what's right now available on African migrants in China. So I became interested in this project about 4 years ago, but I got distracted by other interesting stuff. And in the meantime, people had conducted their research and they have started publishing. So when we put in this grant, okay, the publications hadn't come out yet. By the time we got the grant, I noticed the publications were out and I started to panic. So I realized, you know, I had to find a new angle to it. And that's what led me to student migrants. Okay, right now the scholarship mainly categorizes the different types of Africans in China by the purpose of their stay, by their country or locality of origin. Some of these articles also talk about cities as sites, okay, and they use descriptive spatial metaphors such as Guangzhou as a trading outpost, an enclave, okay, or cities like Guangzhou that act as a bridge between Africa and China. Okay, other works talk about global supply chains, a very economistic kind of approach, okay, and also globalization. Now, more recently, Heidi Hogan has published a paper on education exchanges and cities, and I recognize that these education exchanges, okay, happening amongst African migrants cannot be delinked from economics, because as I said to you earlier, okay, some of them go to China because of the existing trading relations, okay, that or their personal interest in doing business. So as you can see from Heidi's paper, 5% of the international student body in Chinese universities are African students. And in the paper, she talks about who they are, where they're from, their pathways, student satisfaction, and also the relationship between business and studies. So I'm going to have to be a bit faster, actually, because I want to play you a short music clip to keep you awake. So as I have mentioned earlier, there are trading and non-trading cities. So Guangzhou is more popularly seen as a trading city. Wuhan is more popularly seen as a non-trading city. But of course, we cannot divide them so neatly, because even when I was doing fieldwork in Wuhan, the African students tell me they actually go to Guangzhou during the summer vacation to work as translators or to help out in businesses. In my fieldwork also, what I'm interested to do is to ground claims of urban cosmopolitanism and pay attention to how brain circulation represented by these students, what it actually means for the translatability of their urban aspirations across trans-territorial spaces. In simple English, what it means is I'm interested to find out how the qualifications that they obtain from China, is it actually recognized in Africa? Does it help them to get better jobs? Okay. If I have time, I will tell you more. But if not, you just have to be kept in suspense for now. So what I did was I tried to do ethnographic immersion. Okay, I say try because we have very limited time in the field. I followed people when they went to do their business. I hung around with them on campus, in classrooms, hostels, canteens. I was everywhere basically being pesky. I also went to some formal and informal spaces of worship and did some leisure activities with them, such as dining, clubbing, and going shopping. Okay, it sounded like I had fun, but really, I was doing work. All right. I carried out formal and informal interviews with African students. So far, 12 in Guangzhou and 19 in Wuhan. So the students are undergraduate and graduate students. Some came on scholarships, but many are actually self-funded. In fact, the ones who are in Wuhan, they are more likely to be on scholarships because Wuhan is seen as a less attractive place for these African students to go to. So it's really the scholarships that prompt them to go to Wuhan. So of my study sample, I did not restrict by nationality or course of study, but I'm still thinking about how I should move forward. Now, what also came up in my field was the role of social media in doing research. So even when I was, whether I was in the field or out of the field, I kept in touch with them through the Chinese equivalent of WhatsApp, okay, known as QQ, WeChat, email, etc. So it helps me to stay in the field in some sense, even when I am not there. Okay, so I will not go into too much detail about this, but these are the this is about the history of partnerships between Africa and China, okay, the role of international organizations in promoting these partnerships, and how the political rhetoric has moved, okay, from economic influence towards ideological influence. So what are the students' aspirations for going to China? Okay, many of it is many of them go because of family influences and because they want business experience. Okay, family influences because they have family members who are doing business there. They also want to accrue knowledge from the Chinese experience of accelerated development. Okay, and I think we also cannot forget about the new windows of opportunity, okay, represented by China for education as previously or currently still, you know, colonial destinations tighten student entries for these African students. So before they arrive in China, nobody wanted to go, as one of my interviewee puts it, okay, because they didn't know very much about it. China was also seen as not as desirable a place as, say, France or the UK. Okay, they knew about China through television, through internet, through popular culture. Okay, but when they arrived in China, they found that they suffered from language paralysis. Okay, they had difficulty adapting to food in China, especially in Wuhan, because the food there is very spicy, or if they are Muslims, okay, religious restrictions means that it's difficult. And one interviewee told me that for the first 2 weeks, he actually ate nothing but fruits because he didn't know where to go to find a Muslim restaurant, and he couldn't order the food in any case because he didn't speak the language. What also often came out is the idea of these Chinese cities as being dirtier than Africa, and I will not go into details, okay? But I wanted to play you a song from someone I met in the field in Wuhan, and he is actually the winner of the Wuhan Foreign Friends Song and Dance Competition. And in his song, you know, he talks about the difficulty of adapting to life in China. So let me just, I'm only going to play a couple of minutes of it. So he talks about making friends, food, getting to know girls, and learning about the language. So I'll just play the second stanza. So in this third stanza, he then talks about the food culture, and actually I brought along with me the dry spicy noodles, okay, from Wuhan, which he talks about, okay, and it's basically seen as local food culture. It's very, very cheap, all right, and it's also very, very spicy. Okay, so let me just quickly move on. All right, so that earlier bit was some entertainment, but also to highlight how, you know, these African migrants struggle to adapt to life in Chinese cities initially. All right, so when they go to Chinese universities, most of them take Chinese language classes for 1 to 2 years, and following that, then they do their degrees in Chinese or English. And so, as I mentioned earlier, Wuhan and Guangzhou draws different types of students. The ones who go to Wuhan are usually on scholarships, or they claim to be more interested in learning Chinese seriously. And the ones that go to Guangzhou tend to do business at the same time as they study. What do they think of the quality of education in these Chinese cities? They say in the Chinese universities, they are taught to copy. Their professors advise them not to be creative and innovative, but all they need to learn is to copy, okay? And they also say that even though it's very much about copying, but knowledge transfer is still possible, okay, from the Chinese experience to development in Africa. So what about outside the classroom? As I mentioned earlier, some of them, they lead what I would call dual lives. They run family businesses, they broker deals, okay, or they are intending to start their businesses after they graduate. These are their leisure spaces, a church. They are spatially and socially segregated from the Chinese students, who they seen as shy and study-oriented. So this is a hostel. The foreign students are separated from the Chinese students. And in one of the universities, the men are separated from the women. Okay, and I could tell you more about how these African migrants are hypersexualized, but I will leave that for another presentation. I also came to think about, you know, ideas around urban visibility and invisibility. So as I said to you earlier, in Guangzhou, actually the migrant presence is more perceptible, okay? It is known as the chocolate city than compared to Wuhan, okay? And there are hidden worlds going on behind closed doors. outdoors, so such as the informal economies in the hometown restaurants and apartment blocks like this. Okay, and also Chinese peddlers who go to these kind of hometown restaurants, okay, to peddle their phone top-up services. However, I would say that these migrants have limited capacities to aspire in China because they are seen as uninvited guests, okay, and there is also a term used to describe them. They are gold diggers. Also, given the temporary nature of their stay, they don't feel that they can do much to change things or their urban lives in China. So most of them recognize that as much as they may want to remain in China, okay, they will probably have to return home. So I just want to, in the last minute or so, quickly say that there is some contention over whether they should remain to do business in China or return to help change Africa, okay, so that translation of knowledge. Okay, they also express admiration for Chinese foreign policy, although they are aware of Chinese hypocrisy in terms of its foreign policy. At the same time, also, they talk about how they, as Africans in China, they would like to limit foreign influence of globalization in Africa, whether from the West or from China. So this ties into broader kind of rhetoric around Africa-China relations. Now, emerging themes that are coming out is about the differentiated capacities towards urban aspirations. I'm trying to ground claims of urban cosmopolitanism and also to think about how aspirations are translatable across trans-territorial spaces or not. And this is really the last slide. Okay, so I'm still thinking about, you know, how do you do justice to ethnography given the limited time that we have. The students are very, very busy and constantly interviews get postponed, okay? And then suddenly they all come together and I just get very tired at the end of the day. All right, should I restrict my sample to certain African countries to reduce the variability or leave it open-ended? That's still open to question. Now, I think this is something I want to talk a little bit about, okay, which is also, I think Kelvin sort of hinted at it, that For projects like ours, you know, we talk about migration, and the migrants themselves often frame their experiences in terms of the country they come from rather than the cities that they come from. And so constantly during my interviews, I have to keep drawing it back to cities, and it feels a bit forced, actually. But I'm still trying to work that through, so perhaps the other collaborators share my sentiments or not. And lastly, I think, you know, it's also worth thinking about the role of social media in research. So that's all for the presentation. Sorry for taking more time. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Elaine. And I think next up we have Dr. Mark Jane.